This second deep dive of January 2023 is from Kebby and colleagues. Adherence to international dietary recommendations in association with all-cause mortality and fatal and non-fatal cardiovascular disease risk, a prospective analysis of UK Biobank participants, published in BMC Medicine in 2021. What we know, think we know, or are starting to know. Allow me, dear listener, to begin with a quote. The flawed science behind this message and subsequent change in dietary guidelines introduced for Americans in 1977, followed by the UK in 1983, has resulted in increased consumption of low-fat junk food, refined carbohydrates, and polyunsaturated vegetable oils. The conspicuous rise in obesity immediately following their introduction suggests that they are the root cause of the problem. No doubt you are all overly and tragically familiar with this line of reasoning at this point, that dietary guidelines are causative of increased levels of non-communicable disease in the population over the period following their introduction. This is not only found in the realm of random reports, such as that cited for the quote above, but is present in the published literature, including claims that evidence did not support the introduction of guidelines and that the evidence does not support current guidelines. In a previous deep dive, October 2021, we covered the Copenhagen General Population Study, a prospective cohort study in Denmark, which showed that low adherence to Danish national dietary guidelines was associated with higher risk of cardiovascular and total mortality. However, while dietary guidelines are implemented at the national level, they also have international scope due to their relative similarities in the broad dietary characteristics recommended. Consequently, in 2004, the World Health Organization expert consultation identified several dietary characteristics for dietary recommendations, which have been considered in the adoption of dietary guidelines in up to 81 countries. What of adherence to these more universal recommendations in a national level population? The present study investigated this question in the United Kingdom. The study. The present study was conducted in the UK Biobank, a national prospective cohort study in adults aged between 37 to 75 years. The aim of this study was to analyze the associations between four main World Health Organization dietary recommendations and mortality risk. The exposure of interest was adherence to the following recommendations. 1. Saturated fat less than 10% of energy. 2. Added sugars less than 10% of energy. 3. Dietary fiber over 25 grams per day, and 4. Fruit and vegetables over 5 servings or around 400 grams per day. The primary analysis categorized participants based on number of recommendations met, 0, 1, 2, or 3 to 4. A secondary analysis was also conducted based on each individual recommendation. Those meeting 0 recommendations were the reference group, i.e. the group against which the other categories were compared. The outcomes of interest were all-cause mortality, total cardiovascular disease, total being a composite of hospital admissions and or death from coronary heart disease, heart failure, cardiomyopathy, and stroke. And finally, cardiovascular disease mortality. Dietary intake was assessed using an online, web-based 24-hour recall. To be included in the analysis, participants were required to have completed a minimum of 2 24-hour recalls. Other questionnaires were completed at baseline for data on factors like education status, smoking status, alcohol intake, etc. In a subgroup of this cohort, blood samples were also taken to analyze cardiometabolic risk factors. The study also analyzed cross-sectional associations between adherence to the dietary recommendations and levels of cardiometabolic risk factors. Results. 115,051 participants were included in the final analysis, of which 57% were female. Average follow-up time for all-cause mortality and cardiovascular disease mortality was 11.2 years, respectively, while average follow-up time for total cardiovascular disease was 10.6 years. The average age of participants was 55.8 years at baseline. 29.7% of participants met 0 of the dietary recommendations, 38.5% met 1, 22.3% met 2, and 9.5% met 3 to 4. Of the individual dietary recommendations, 28.4% met the target for less than 10% saturated fat, 41.9% met the target of less than 10% added sugars, 10.9% met the target for over 25 grams per day of fiber, and 26.1% met the target for over 5 servings per day of fruit and vegetables. All-cause mortality. Compared to the reference group of zero recommendations, those meeting two recommendations had a 9% lower risk of all-cause mortality and a confidence interval range from 3 to 15% lower risk. Those meeting 3 to 4 recommendations had a 21% lower risk of all-cause mortality and a confidence interval range of 12 to 29% lower risk. Total cardiovascular disease. Compared to the reference group of zero recommendations, those meeting 3 to 4 recommendations had a 7% lower risk of total cardiovascular disease and a range in the confidence intervals from null 1.0 to 14% lower risk. Cardiovascular disease mortality. Compared to the reference group of zero recommendations, those meeting 3 to 4 recommendations had a 22% lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease and a 95% confidence interval range of 2% to 39%. Cross-sectional risk factor analysis. Compared to the reference group of zero recommendations, those meeting 3 to 4 recommendations had a 1.6% lower body fat, 1.53 centimeter lower waist circumference, 0.19 millimole per liter or 7.3 milligram per deciliter lower LDL cholesterol, 40 milligram per deciliter lower apolipoprotein B or ApoB, which is a marker for all atherogenic lipoproteins in the circulation, a 0.10 millimole per liter lower triglycerides, and finally a 0.55 milligram per liter lower C-reactive protein or CRP. The critical breakdown. Pros. The study had clearly defined aims, exposures, and outcomes. The primary, secondary, and sensitivity subgroup analyses were all clearly distinguished. The study included a very large sample size and was well balanced between sexes. The study was also well balanced for socioeconomic status, with similar representation from the top and bottom quintiles of the deprivation index. The follow-up times for the analyses were adequate. Detailed assessments were taken of participant characteristics, which included the subgroup with biomarker data, which permitted the analysis of cardiometabolic risk factors. The analysis only included participants with a minimum of 2 completed dietary assessments, and also conducted a sensitivity analysis according to number of completed 24-hour recalls. The results were largely similar for those completing 3 or more or 4 or more 24-hour recalls. Cons. The dietary assessment utilized 24-hour recalls for a prospective, i.e. over time, study, and despite a minimum of 2 24-hour recalls being required for inclusion in the analysis, this may still have introduced measurement error and failed to capture true representative day-to-day intake, i.e. did a participant just happen to consume less than 10% energy from added sugars the day before? The sample was 96.6% white ethnicity, which is not representative of the general UK population, which is 81% white ethnicity. Certain outcomes, for example, cardiovascular disease mortality, had small samples for the outcome of interest, which may introduce some bias and lack precision in the findings. For the cross-sectional analysis of risk factors, not all blood samples were taken at the same point in time, i.e. blood samples taken at different time to the dietary assessment. Thus, the analysis is not quite cross-sectional in the literal meaning of this design. Key characteristic. In addition to the primary analysis, which investigated adherence to the number of the 4 WHO dietary recommendations, the secondary analysis of the study also considered the associations for each individual recommendation. Interestingly, only the target of meeting over 5 servings per day of fruits and vegetables was significantly associated with any outcome, specifically a 9% lower risk of all-cause mortality and a range in the confidence intervals of 11 to 16% lower risk of all-cause mortality. None of the other recommendations were individually associated with significant reductions in any of the outcomes, but the directions of effect for some findings were still informative. For example, fiber over 25 grams a day was associated with an 8% lower risk of total cardiovascular disease and a range in the confidence intervals from the null 1.0 to a 15% lower risk. Of course, this could give rise to some questions. Is saturated fat or sugar less than 10% of energy not beneficial? Well, no. One crucial factor to bear in mind is that this analysis only adjusted for the other dietary recommendations, i.e., the analysis for less than 10% saturated fat only adjusted for less than 10% of sugar, over 25 grams per day of fiber, and 5 servings per day of fruits and vegetables. However, prior knowledge clearly demonstrates that the replacement nutrient for saturated fat is a crucial moderating factor, and the replacement of saturated with unsaturated fats or with complex carbohydrate is associated with lower cardiovascular disease risk. An example of why the threshold for saturated fat in isolation may not alone be sufficient to see significant reductions in observational research. Consider the Women's Health Initiative intervention trial, in which 49,000 women were randomized to a low-fat dietary pattern or usual care control diet. Despite lower saturated fat from 12.5 to 8.1%, there was no significant reduction in cardiovascular disease risk over 8 years. However, the reduction in saturated fat came largely with refined carbohydrates replacing the saturated fat. The participants merely replaced one risk-related nutrient with another. Thus, the present study should not be interpreted as evidence against any single recommendation, as the analysis did not consider potentially crucial substitution effects. Interesting finding. It is interesting that, despite the stronger finding in relation to all-cause mortality, the outcome for total cardiovascular disease was less impressive, and fatal cardiovascular disease exhibited quite wide confidence intervals, indicative of a lack of precision, which likely reflected the very small number of events, a total of 69, and variability in the group meeting 3 to 4 dietary recommendations. However, we can perhaps use the biomarker data to put together a bigger picture in relation to cardiovascular disease. In this data, LDL cholesterol and ApoB both decreased linearly with increasing adherence to the dietary guidelines, while triglycerides and C-reactive protein were also lower in the group meeting 3 to 4 recommendations. However, the magnitude of these differences was relatively small to modest. For example, average LDL in the 3 to 4 adherence group was 3.46 millimole per liter or 133.5 milligrams per deciliter. Ideally, this would be less than 3 millimole per liter or 115 milligrams per deciliter. If the biomarker data is representative of the overall cohort, it may be that the overall effect of adherence to these specific guidelines related only to modest effects on important cardiovascular disease risk factors, including the causal pathway in LDL and ApoB, which may not have been sufficient to exert more pronounced effects on cardiovascular disease risk reduction. This does not mean the guidelines are ineffective. More likely, it may reflect several factors. First, the age of participants at baseline, 55 years, is relevant given that the underlying pathophysiology of cardiovascular disease may already be advanced. In support of this, a sensitivity analysis that excluded individuals who had a cardiovascular disease event within 2 years of their last dietary assessment showed a slightly greater magnitude of risk reduction, 25% compared to 22% in the primary analysis, indicating that the effect of greater adherence to the dietary recommendations may be more pronounced in lower risk individuals. Secondly, there were also no differences in other causal risk factors for cardiovascular disease, specifically blood pressure, and the analysis did not include recommendations for sodium intake. Thus, bear in mind that the analysis was largely for a discrete number of dietary recommendations, albeit important ones, but is not entirely encompassing of other aspects of the recommendations, for example, sodium or omega-3 polyunsaturated fats, that are important for cardiovascular health. Relevance. At this point, we should be able to put questions over dietary guidelines, whether at the national level or the more universal WHO recommendations, to bed. The papers that are most cited in support of the contention that dietary guidelines are not evidence-based all derived from the same author, Zoe Harcombe, in the same journals, BMJ Open Heart and British Journal of Sports Medicine, that respectively bear about as much resemblance to the truth of nutrition science as the Republicans to US election results. Several findings from the present study add weight to the refutation of common claims made against the dietary guidelines. First, only 9.5% of the overall cohort, that's 9,712 of 115,051 participants, met 3 to 4 of the recommendations. A 1984 study of British dietitians following the introduction of the UK dietary guidelines found that only 10% met the recommendation for fat intake, and 7% met the target for fibre intake. In a study in 217 free-living adults, 2 years after the introduction of the dietary guidelines, not one was found to meet all the recommended guidelines, and just 5% met the recommendation for fat and fibre intake. Another analysis showed that at 3 years after the introduction, just 8.3% met the targets for fruit and vegetables. Thus, the present study confirms the reality of the status quo. The guidelines were never really followed. If the contention is that following the guidelines is associated with worse health outcomes, then this is also demonstrably falsifiable. In the Copenhagen general population study that we covered in a previous deep dive, it was lack of adherence to the guidelines that was associated with 35% higher risk of cardiovascular disease mortality and 46% higher risk of all-cause mortality. Cumulatively, there is little to no evidential wiggle room to argue that dietary guidelines are A, followed by any substantial proportion of the general population, B, associated with increased risk if they are adhered to, or C, associated with better health if they are not adhered to. The search for convenient scapegoats should really move on from the dietary guidelines. Application to practice. The emphasis on the 4 dietary characteristics in the present study is indicative of broad universal applicability of the core characteristics of healthy dietary patterns, notwithstanding that this specific analysis was conducted in the UK population specifically. And importantly, notwithstanding that this analysis was only for specific recommendations, other characteristics, sodium, unsaturated fats, whole grains, remain important aspects of dietary guidelines with broad applicability. How many nutrition professionals and coaches, if asked what they recommend to clients, would say, "Oh, I recommend that they aim to follow the dietary guidelines"? There is a lesson in all of this that I think is important for nutrition practitioners to hold dear, that the best practices are the ones right in front of us. Of course, saying the targets is easy. The role of nutrition professionals is to help an individual become competent in meeting these recommendations in their daily life. And that is the challenge.